We ready?
Yes.
Alright.
So what do you think is the most challenging thing about working nights?
It's definitely the sleep. I've found a way to make my sleeping as best as it can be, and it's still a very unhealthy lifestyle. I'm not the kind of person to be against caffeine. I drink it a lot, but I also am aware that it's that it's not great for me. And the being up at night, you get used to it, but your body is never acknowledges that it's natural. It's not natural to be up all night and to be going to bed at 8 in the morning.
Something that we've talked about on the program several times in the last couple of years is need for mental health care in Iowa, and how the police end up really playing an active role in mental health care. How does that play into your life on the night shift?
Big time. The hours can make it tough to find resources. Not every resource is 24/7. There are a lot of resources that are 24/7, but certainly not all of them. As far as the night shift focus would go, I would say one of the things I love about it is because we're not always as busy as other shifts, you can really spend the time that it takes to get the outcome you're looking for. You do get called to be a part of someone's life in that crisis.
Can you give me an example? I don't want you to violate anybody's confidentiality, but can you give me an example of a time you've had to put that crisis intervention training into action?
I mean, I'd honestly say nightly. Everyone's different, but everyone really needs to be understood. And the communication, I mean, communication is huge. And I've watched officers who let people's, you know, who are way up here and just hyped and screaming and upset about something that to a person behaving rationally and not in a crisis would have no reason to be behaving that way about or to be upset about, just to hear them out and to have the ability to communicate patiently and I guess
de-escalate in a situation.
Absolutely. But a specific situation, one that a person that I met not too long ago, had been telling his live-in ex-girlfriend, they moved in together because they were dating, they broke up because of a financial situation, couldn't separate. He was suffering from, depression and was suicidal at times. Well, he had made comments about killing himself that night. And so she called us because she was concerned. And when we got there, he downplayed it greatly, had no interest in going anywhere, said, I'm fine, you know. He didn't want to go to the hospital. I felt on multiple levels sincerely, I felt he should go to the hospital because of his statements, because of his thoughts of suicide. But also, unfortunately, liability reasons exist as well. And I talked to him, I don't know, upwards of an hour, tried all sorts of different angles. And he kept saying he couldn't go because he was hungry and he didn't want to be stuck in the ER all night, and because he just didn't feel like he should have to go. And I finally went through the angle of explaining everything I was hearing back to him, and then kind of put it on him of the situation he was putting me in. That's not something I normally do, but it seemed like it was going to work with him. I said, just imagine how Mike, me, you know, and I like to personalize it. I'm not an officer or anybody. I'm Mike. Is going to feel leaving here tonight, wondering the rest of my shift and maybe even tomorrow, like what's going to happen to you if I just leave you here in this situation. And I could tell that I finally reached him somehow. And again, that's a rare one. I wouldn't normally do that, but that's the way I reached him. And he finally agreed to go with me. I mean, it was a longer conversation than that, but he finally agreed to go with me. And as a reward, we went and sat at McDonald's and ate dinner together because he said he was hungry. And it's pretty incredible to be involved in someone's life like that for just that moment. I mean, other than you asking about it, I don't know if I would even remember that, and I'll probably forget it after tonight for a long time. But
it sounds like you really felt like you helped him.
I felt like I did. I hope I did. It's really unfortunate that you can't do as much as you want to do sometimes. But it felt like I did. I felt like, if nothing else, I helped him in that, on that night. Whether I, you know, turned his life around or not, I probably couldn't fly that flag, but certainly felt like I was played a major role in surviving that night. I know growing up as a kid in Waterloo, every little interaction with law enforcement I ever had, I remember to this day, and that's a big responsibility to carry, to know that, you know, a dozen times a night you're going to interact with somebody, and you're going to, other than the major ones, you're going to forget about it by tomorrow, but they're going to remember it. They're going to tell their friends. They're going to talk about it on social media. Whatever they're going to do with it, they're not going to keep it to themselves, good or bad.
Obviously there are people in our communities who are more nervous about interaction with law enforcement than others. And of course there has been a lot of racial tension with law enforcement, a lot of reports of police violence specifically targeting black people or, you know, other people of color. So in your interactions with the public, how do you think about that?
You feel it. You certainly feel it. Sometimes you'll get individuals who are flying that flag out of a defense mechanism, and there's people who legitimately have a reason to believe that and feel that. It doesn't really come into my mind until it's pointed out by someone else. You know, if I'm investigating a crime and talking to someone and they make the allegation of, if I was white, you wouldn't be doing that. And then I try to, as politely as possible, kind of shut that down. Say, nope, these are the facts that I'm covered, that I was provided with, and you're here, and XYZ is what led me to believe that you're a person I should be talking to about what I'm investigating. If it is a black gentleman or woman, well, the description that was provided to me by the witness said it was a black male in a gray shirt, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And I say, it is unfortunate that if you are an innocent person involved in something like that, I mean, that does suck to have the cops stop you and talk to you about why you're here or what you're doing. I mean, and another thing I like to point out to people, and this is truth, this is sincere, is I'd rather have you frustrated with me over investigating a crime that I'm investigating and wasting a few minutes of your time than... I'd rather live with that than live with, well, I don't want to piss this guy off. It might be the dude we're looking for, but I certainly wouldn't want him mad at me if he's not. And then ignoring it, and then finding out I let someone's attacker get away because I didn't want the negative interaction, you know? I would much rather live with someone being frustrated with me than not doing my job, I guess.
So, mostly, you're on the quieter side of town.
513.
Have you had a situation since working in law enforcement where you felt like your life was in danger?
Yes. And it's interesting, those things, you do the things that your training kind of is telling you to do, or your instincts are telling you to do, and you're aware of the dangers, and you assess them appropriately. You're not being careless, but you don't really feel it until it's all over. And that can sometimes be quite the rush of, I guess, adrenaline, or a dump of adrenaline. There's been shootings that I've been a part of. When I say shootings, not police shooting someone, but others, suspects shooting, and then we catch those people, or we encounter them while they're fleeing, and we know they have a gun, and we know they've recently used it in a violent manner. And those situations can certainly be very overwhelming, but it's just, although it's can be scary, this mechanism of training kind of takes over, and you don't really your brain doesn't really download all the dangers. I mean, it does. You knew you were in danger, and you were behaving accordingly, I would hope, you know. taking precautions and keeping yourself safe. But you're not overwhelmed with it in the moment. It kind of dumps on you later.
Sure, I'm sure that takes a lot of processing after the fact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And part of our CIT training that we've brought back to Iowa City, and the portion of it that I've been most passionate about is officer self-care and officer wellness, because that's certainly almost a taboo topic. You know, you got into this job, so why would you possibly need any help? Why would you need to have someone help you process things like that, or process fear, or process the sleep disorders that we develop and things like that? And I'm very proud of our department and law enforcement in general, getting a lot better at that, taking care of their officers and making sure that we're getting checked on, and not just spending 20 or 30 years burying stuff, you know, that you see. Because even in I think the sad stuff you see, it eats at you a lot more than the scary stuff. The suicides and the accidents that might claim a life, especially if it's a child. Things like that. You could see so much of that. And
is there one of those incidents that comes back to you a lot that you find yourself thinking about?
My very first call for service was a suicide. And when I say very first, I mean I had been employed by the city of Iowa City for about 3.5 hours. And we did some paperwork for the morning. And then over the lunch hour, they had us go ride with officers. The very first day. And we went on a welfare check of a person who got fired from their job, and no one had heard from him for like 8 days or something. And we found him in his garage, deceased. And it was a very violent suicide. So just the combination of the sadness of it, plus having, I mean, just really no real idea of what happens to a human body when this one was a shotgun suicide. So I would say any call like that I'll always remember, but that one was unique because it was quite literally my very first call for service. That was kind of an overwhelming introduction to law enforcement. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
So this is one of those moments where we probably won't continue to drive there the whole way. But we're going to start driving emergent now, just in case.
All right. The lights are on.
Lights are red. Unseen at 1500.
So, an officer that's on the domestic advised that the additional units who are coming, step it up. I mean, like, hurry up and get here. There's another officer who is just showing up already.
2400 bucks.
So they have two there right now. And we,
2400 blocks of 2nd Street.
We're not very close, but no one else was answering, so we're going to say that. I let them know that we're going to go. And this is going to be kind of a long drive for us, but unless someone's closer, it's going to be on us to try to get there and help.
Okay.
So, for something like this, because I don't really know what's going on, you can get out if you'd like, but I'm going to have you wait outside until you hear differently from me.
There's two other police vehicles at the scene as well. The officers have just brought a suspect out of the apartment building. They're putting him in the back seat of one of the vehicles.
So this is a domestic dispute. Is it somewhat similar to the instance that I was telling you about last night? In this instance, the female has some very obvious injuries. She will not tell us how it happened, and doesn't want to talk to us about it. So she probably understands that could get him in trouble, is probably why she doesn't want to talk about it, but he's being a little more open about it. He's kind of telling us what happened and how he feels it happened. And because they got in a physical altercation where someone got injured, it'd be really hard to explain why we didn't arrest someone, and then you have to kind of determine who was the primary aggressor is how you make that decision, and that person should be arrested according to the state law.
Do you feel like spending all this time in the community that you live in, spending all this time out at night, seeing what you see, doing what you do, do you feel like you know a different side of Iowa City?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm not from Iowa City, like I mentioned before, but even in Waterloo, when I said I didn't know what cops did all night, you know, I guess I always assumed, because I was naive enough to assume it, that what the cops did is what I saw in the news in the morning, you know? And if I didn't see anything on the news for a few days, that means they didn't do anything in the last few days, you know? I didn't realize these things aren't going to make the news. And some things even worse than this don't make the news, and it's intriguing, to say the least. It really changes your outlook on it. In fact, I think there was a time when I wasn't able to allow myself to enjoy just the vast majority of things that Iowa City has to offer, events and culture and everything like that, because I was letting the negativity I experienced kind of change what I thought Iowa City was. And it's not by any means a bad place. It's an amazing place, actually. But I think when I first came here, you know, I wouldn't say I had a dislike for it. It was just more of like a nervous thing of like, well, I don't want to be downtown when I have to go there for work. But now I can certainly see it in two different lights. Like, it's almost like it's not the same place.